Hi everyone, I'm Cheryl McNeil Fisher. Dr. Kathy King and I want you to know you are important to us. We are thrilled that you're here with us today for another episode of Writing Works Wonders.
Welcome to Writing Works Wonders. We're so pleased you're with us for this episode 123 and this exceptional interview with Kristen Combs to discuss travel writing and related writing careers. So buckle up, Buttercup, and get ready for another episode full of inspiration, laughter, and excitement for Bibliophiles at Writing Works Wonders. I'm Dr. Kathy King, and I'm so pleased to introduce you to my fabulous co-host, Cheryl McNeil Fisher.
Hey, Kathy. Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here. And I got a fabulous co-host, too, who's also my friend. And I call her the master of the universe. You want to know why? You'll have to check it out in our web design for authors, because she'll even let you become the master of the universe. Kathy and her friend went to a festival around the holidays. And she thought it was just going to be crafts and homemade things. And while she was walking, oh surprise, an author, Kristen Combs. Of course, Kathy went over and talked to her, loved what she was talking about and her book, how interesting and exciting, and asked Kristen if she would like to be on our program. How many times has someone asked you something or got you excited about something, but never followed through? I don't know if Kristen really thought that we would follow through, but we did.
Thank you, Cheryl.
And she's here. And we're so excited to have her, to hear about her career in travel writing and tourism, as well as her book. I hope that this energizes you, gives you new ideas, and gives you other options, knowing there's so many possibilities for writers. So if you feel something, you have something come to you while you're listening, record it or write it down. I don't know about you, but sometimes I can have the greatest thought and then all of a sudden, phew, oh, I forget it for a few days. Back over to you, Kathy.
Welcome to the show, Kristen. It's great to have you here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
As we were saying before the show, what is your, quote, day job?
So I work at Visit Knoxville, the official convention and visitors bureau for the city of Knoxville and Knox County, Tennessee.
Wonderful place, isn't it?
It certainly is. I love it here. And my role specifically, I am the director of communications and social strategies. So that's a very long title to say that I do a lot of things under the communications and marketing umbrella. I write for and manage our blog and other editorial content on visitknoxville.com. I also manage Visit Knoxville's social media platforms. And then I also provide resources and itineraries and other information for visiting travel writers.
Wow. For those that don't know, Kathy, me, I happen to live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And if you're wondering how we got a travel writer and the communications director for Visit Knoxville on the show, that's how it happened to happen. I met Kristen at a festival where she had a booth because she is the author of a book, a travel book about Knoxville. And we're going to talk about that in addition to some other things. I thought that she would be a very unique and informative guest for our show and bring some very different perspectives about writing for our audience. Would you share with the participants what's the title of your book?
Absolutely. The title of my book is 100 Things to Do in Knoxville Before You Die. It was published almost exactly a year ago by Reedy Press, based out of St. Louis, Missouri.
Terrific. I love that. How did the idea and the development of the book come about for you?
The publisher, Reedy, actually reached out to Visit Knoxville for some suggestions on who might be interested in writing such a book. The book is part of a series in a way. There's 100 things to do in, say, Omaha, or 100 things to do in, in multiple, many, many cities across the United States. And it just hadn't to been one for Knoxville. And there's another Reedy Press author here who had written a book more focused on the restaurant specifically, but this particular title of the 100 things had not been penned. So we thought, well, I could write that. I've got a lot of experience of attractions and activities and things to do and places to go in Knoxville. And so that kind of got the ball rolling. I said, I could do this. And I did it.
Terrific. And how long did it take you to write the book?
I would say the book probably took about a year. Luckily, I had really a lot of the experience really already under my belt of doing the things. So that really helped me in that way. And I had written about a lot of them in various ways. We call them vignettes. Each of the things has its own page that we just call a vignette. I would say that that's how that went about. And then of course, through the editing phase and going through all of the nitty-gritty things, if there were any duplications or small errors, all of that kind of thing in the final production.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that it's a long time, a lot of experience prior to actually starting the project that gave you a head of steam to be able to
Oh,
do the project.
absolutely. I would say 4 or 5 years plus of experience just at Visit Knoxville outside of my own personal interests and activities. I love to travel myself, so I always look at things from not only my local perspective, but from a traveler perspective as well. Outside of this, one of my personal goals is to see all of the national park units in the United States, so of which there are, I think there's 428 maybe now at this point, from the big national parks and the little presidential homes and rivers and battlefields and everything in between. That's a passion of mine, and while living here in Knoxville, I kind of take that same approach and really like to be able to see and do and experience everything that there is in Knoxville.
Fabulous. As a travel writer, your path in the world of writing is maybe different, and from what you were talking about a little bit earlier, more varied, I would say, than many of us that write in other areas, fiction or nonfiction. Can you describe a little bit more about what your typical day, if there is such a thing, a typical day in your world of writing is like? For instance, what kind of projects would you be working on in a typical day?
Gosh, a typical day. I don't know that such a thing exactly exists, but I would say it really is a little bit of everything. And that can be from a 140 character tweet to corporate reporting to a press release to designing an itinerary, providing content, writing a blog post. It could really be any of those things. So for me, I kind of start with, what is the platform? What is the message? And who is the audience? Because there is such a big difference of having a very limited number of characters on a social media post when, of course, a photo might do a lot of the explaining of what that is for you. But at the same time, you're trying to be fun and welcoming, and you can use emojis at your heart's desire, which I, of course, love to do. But things may be a little bit different when you are doing a blog post where you've got a lot more space to elaborate. I especially like to write guide style posts where I can really say, go here, then go here in this order. And it cuts down on the time. And I know it can be a really great experience for someone because I've done it personally myself. And then it, corporate reporting, of course, darn it, the emojis have to go. But you can still tell the story of all the things that you've done. And similar with a press release, the basic who, what, where, when, why, and how kind of a thing. So it's just a way to get that message across to a different audience on a, from a different platform perspective.
And then you have managerial roles and also meetings that you have to coordinate in and about all of those different writing tasks that you're involved in.
Yeah, so sometimes I am working with other people on our marketing team, whether that be with the blog, whether that be a press release, there may be a meeting or whatnot that I haven't been in, and we're compiling information together. And the goal is really to make it sound for there to be one voice, even though there may be multiple contributors to any project.
So, do you think that in your line of work, what would you say are essential skills for a writer?
Essential skills for a writer, I would say developing said voice, having a sense of perspective is really important. Knowing again who that audience is, because that could really change your tone. And I found that out when writing my book, 100 Things to Do in Knoxville Before You Die. Most of what I'm doing in my role at Visit Knoxville is geared toward a visitor experience, whereas the book could be visitor or local. So, a local, of course, if they're in Knoxville, they've got a lot more time to develop some of these activities and visit some of these attractions, where a visitor, they may be here for a couple of days. They may come back. They may not. They might come back at a different season. But someone that's living here, it's kind of a different angle, I think. So I think that's something really to consider in who is your audience, who is the intended person that this is going to. And then, of course, kind of the boring stuff that some might find boring is the punctuation and the grammar. I think those skills are absolutely necessary to have. The vocabulary to make things interesting, just changing up what you're saying and how you're saying it, I think is really important. I think all of those things combine together. And then having in the case of travel writing, having the experience to support a lot of that. And I think reading in general, I think that's its own skill that really supports writing.
Those are excellent points. Excellent, excellent. Thank you for those. One last question before I hand it over to Cheryl. For those among that are listening to this interview, say they're interested in travel, they love travel, they have all these experiences, they're also a writer. What would you suggest for them as to how to prepare to develop a travel book?
I would say possibly two things. I am kind of hesitant to say starting a blog because, from a viewership perspective, only because that has become a little bit more challenging to start one, I think, in 2024. But I think it would be excellent practice if you're not focused solely on viewership or readership necessarily, but more as a place for you to practice that skill of more longer format writing. And it can just get difficult when you're more focused on the readership and the numbers. And it can kind of maybe could might maybe get you down if it's not where you think it should be. But alternatively, I would say social media is another good way to practice a lot of that. And I think a lot of publishers do at this point kind of expect some sort of social media presence. For me myself, I often will say the events that I'm going to be at or particular things I'm experiencing in the book, telling people different places they can purchase the book, giving people a reason that they should follow me. What am I providing to them? Instead of just a journal of me running around town, I want it to be informative. And that's what I think of when I think of that type of writing. You're providing a service in a way to your reader and saying, hey, I can help you with this place. I know this place and I want to share my love and my passion of this place with you. So that's kind of what I think of when I think of sharing that type of writing with the book. I really do think that blogging and social media are really helpful components to that.
Great ideas. Thank you so much, Kristen.
My pleasure. Thank
Cheryl,
you,
over
Kathy.
to you.
In your book, do you have images for each event?
Not for each site, no. There is a limited selection of photos in the book, mostly separating out the different segments of the book. There's different categories from food and drink, sports and recreation, shopping and fashion, history, culture, that kind of a thing. My daughter, who is 4, loves to tell anyone who will listen that there's a tiger in the book. And she's referencing, of course, a picture of a tiger at Zoo Knoxville. So she loves to point that out to just about anyone. But there is a selection of photos in the book.
Walking maps or ways to get around, do you include those as well?
There is not a map in this book. I think that that would be particularly difficult to do, primarily because there are so many places that are listed in this book. I feel like that would be very challenging to represent that in a map sort of format, which is a bummer because I am definitely a map person. This book really does cover really beyond Knoxville, Knox County. There are a couple of spots that are outside that are mentioned in the book, outside of the county. So that would be pretty difficult. And then certain neighborhoods, it would probably become very, very tight to have multiple places listed. And that's kind of the sneaky thing with this book is it says 100 things to do, but there are actually quite a bit more. There are a couple of sections, a couple of vignettes that are neighborhood focused. So I list, maybe even 10 or more different places in a small area. So I think that that would be difficult, although I love the idea.
Do you write brochures too? I mean, are they even being used still?
I do not personally write
Okay.
brochures, but I have helped contribute to some similar sort of information. For example, Visit Knoxville has an app that can be downloaded in the Voice Map app. It is a GPS-based walking tour of downtown. So I did help contribute in the writing of that. Colleagues of mine and I, we wrote that and walked it together. So it's a scenario where it says, and up on the left, and the GPS will let you know exactly where you are, so it knows when to say what, if that makes
That's
sense.
fantastic. We love talking navigation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great. And I love that it's GPS based because you can list, you can start where you're going to start. You can go for as long as you want to go. If you see maybe a shop you want to pop into, or if you see maybe you want to get a coffee somewhere, you can pause it, go do that, and then come back, push play again, and off you go.
Oh, that's something.
I love it. Yep, I think it's $5.99 on the Voice Map app. If you look up Knoxville, it should pull up for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Out of all of the things that you have in your book, what's one of your favorites? We know your daughter's is the tiger in the zoo.
She loves
What
it.
is yours?
You know, I think I really needed to get it together when answering this question. I'm going to be honest with you because I get asked it all the time and I always feel mildly bamboozled. Because here's the thing, it's kind of hard to compare, say, a hike with barbecue nachos.
Yes, I
So, I
hear
mean, I really
you.
like the hike, but I also really like barbecue nachos. So, it's and I don't know. I guess I love so many things. I'll tell you this. I really love to ride a bike along the Nealon Greenway and take some snacks,
Echo
take some
stop.
watercolors, put them in my little basket on my bike and go to the UT Botanical Gardens and just kind of relax and color and just kind of hang out. And I say this in the book. I say, if you rent your bike or start, if you have your own bike, over at the Knoxville Adventure Collective, and take the Nealon Greenway there. It's about 2.5 miles one way. So I literally say this, it's enough to get your blood pumping without passing out.
That's great.
Like,
That's
we can
great.
do it. We can do this bike ride. And then you take your
Yeah.
break, have your snacks, maybe pick something else in the book, maybe pick up the French market, get a croissant, or maybe stop by Yassine's falafel house, get yourself some shawarma. I'm telling you, it's the best. It's like one of those, it's not like the biggest, most obvious attraction, but it's just something fun that I love to do. Now, in terms of
Yeah.
obvious attractions, you've got to visit the Sun Sphere. I think people don't realize that the Sun Sphere is just like the Eiffel Tower. It's just like Seattle Space Needle. All those structures were built for World's Fairs, and I think it's so cool that Knoxville has such an iconic structure that remains to this day. So I think that's definitely a must-do. You get a beautiful 360-degree view from the observation deck that you can see downtown. You can see as far as the Smokies easily on a beautiful, clear day. I would definitely recommend that.
How did you map out this book? Did you do it by categories like restaurants, events, places to visit, riding bikes, etc.? Or did you do it according to the different areas in Knoxville, around Knoxville? How did you map out your book?
Yeah,
The
that's a
different.
great question, Cheryl. I did. I kind of modeled this again, being that this book is part of a series. I kind of modeled it kind of to go along with those series of here's the chapter, so to speak, subsections. So food and drink is one of those, music and entertainment is one of those, sports and recreation, culture and history, and then shopping and fashion. So within each of those, I kind of thought of the specific attractions that I'd want to include, and then maybe specific activities. Then I also sprinkled in a little bit of neighborhoods within that. And then the very end section has some suggestions to get people started. One of those is activities by season. So if you happen to be visiting Knoxville at a particular time of year, or maybe you've got friends or family coming in and it's springtime, what should you do? Or it's fall. Hey, it's football time in Tennessee. Here are specific things that you can do based on the time of year. And then I've also got some suggested itineraries as well to outside of the season. Some of those are if you're on a budget, some things are things you can only do in Knoxville, maybe some fun with the kids, some things off the beaten path, some things to do for date night. Of course, us coming right off of February and Valentine's Day, I definitely saw a lot of couples looking, checking out the book right around Valentine's Day at some different markets that I've done. So I always tell people, look, I can't help you with the babysitting, but I can help you with date night ideas. So
That's
hopefully,
great.
hopefully that encourages them to pick it up and maybe find some fun things to do together.
Alice, Alice, you may unmute.
Thank you, Chanel. And I am really enjoying your presentation. And you just are such a wonderful speaker. I'm sure you represent Knoxville extremely well wherever you go to speak.
Oh,
And
thank you. Thanks, Alice.
oh, you're welcome. And I just would like to know if we were going to Knoxville and wanted to visit a historical home, because that's what I most enjoy visiting when I go to another
Ooh, me too.
place. And if there's a couple you can suggest and talk about, as well as if there is one that is a famous home or historical home of a writer in your area. So that's my question, and I thank you.
Alice, that is a great question. I love it because I also very much enjoy visiting historical homes. And Knoxville is blessed to have seven of those. They kind of range time period wise from the frontier days, we're talking the late 1780s, early 1790s, up to the baby of the group, which would be an 1890 Victorian mansion. And there's all kinds of wonderful stories and things to learn at all of them. In terms of a writer, I would say technically yes. Blunt Mansion could be considered one of those in a way. That is the birthplace of Tennessee and where the Constitution for Tennessee was signed. And William Blunt was a very interesting individual. First impeachment. A lot of shenanigans. So I think you definitely need to go on a tour there. There's some definite interesting stories. I would also recommend said Victorian home. That would be historic Westwood. That home was built as a wedding promise for Delia Armstrong Lutz. And it is a beautiful home and the home of a woman artist who was successful at the turn of the century, which is already difficult enough to do today, let alone over 100 years ago. And you can see a lot of her original works and certainly worth going to the Knoxville Museum of Art. There's a couple of her pieces at that museum there as well. So that's another thing I love is making connections between the people, the places, the art, and the history. That's a lot of fun for me and something really fun to share. And then also another fun one would be Mabry Hazen. The Mabry Hazen house was built an Italian at home in 1858, and lots of interesting stories there. One of them involving a very scandalous breach of promise lawsuit. So I won't ruin the story there. I think you'll have to plan a visit and check that out. But lots of interesting historic homes here in Knoxville.
Thank you. And next we have Carla Hayes.
Hello.
Hi, Carla. I'm great. How are you?
Okay, I just want to share real quickly that I will always have fond memories of Knoxville because my first ACB convention was when it was in Knoxville in 1986.
Oh, wow.
Two quick questions. First of
Sure.
all, one thing that I did when I was out there is visit Lookout Mountain and the Chattanooga Choo Choo and things like that.
Yeah.
Are those things included in your tour guide? And the second question is, in your tour guide, do you have any information about accessibility features like audio tours or any accessibility type tour concerns? So I'll just mute and listen to your answers and keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you so much, Carla. So the first question, so Lookout Mountain in Chattanooga, the book does not go as far as Chattanooga. I think the closest that I get heading in that direction is there is a winery called Solly Notch in Sweetwater. So maybe halfway to Chattanooga. I do have a page for the Smokies because I feel like, whether you live in Knoxville or whether you're visiting the area, I do think the Smokies is certainly something to be seen. And there's a couple of other things that are outside the county, but still pretty close to Knox County. So no, I don't have anything in Chattanooga listed. To your second question about accessibility, the majority of the vignettes, they're really quite short. They're a paragraph two at most. They're all generally on one page in a pretty small book. So it's kind of the absolute maybe 10,000 foot level of a look at that specific place or activity or attraction. And then there's some like personal tips and tricks in there that are kind of like maybe a favorite order of mine, or I mentioned earlier in this discussion about biking from a specific area to go to the UT Gardens. There's a couple of other things, maybe on parking or a specific day you should go do something for some reason. But outside of that, I don't think there's much comment on accessibility. I don't think there's much on any age suggestions overall or any other scenarios like that. But I do include the address, the phone number, and the website almost on just about everything.
Is there an ebook version? There is, right? Or no?
Yeah, I think
Thought there was.
available, I believe, on
Yeah.
Amazon.
Okay. I thought there was. Okay.
Kristen, do you have certain writing tools that you use frequently, like certain go-to writing tools that you find that you like to use?
You mean like a, do you mean a program like using Word or something? Is that what you mean?
Well, beyond Word, like Grammarly or certain places that you go for a thesaurus or
Oh, well, I would say the majority of the
Doing
time,
research.
honestly, I am using Word for that for my writing itself. And then in terms of like maybe, I would use the thesaurus frequently in Word, but if I'm looking for different things, especially for grammar, I will often look at a couple of different sites. I'll usually, truthfully, I'll just kind of Google what my question is. And sometimes, especially with grammar questions, like, darn it, what is that semicolon doing? Stuff like that. I'll look at a couple of different resources and a couple of different formats to see what does Google even understand what I'm asking? And hopefully kind of weed through and figure that out. But definitely I'm looking at the dictionary. I'm looking at different grammar websites. Nothing in particular comes to mind. I'm sure I've used multiple things out there, but I definitely try to make sure that I'm using the correct punctuation, because those things will catch you.
Do you have any favorite books about writing or about the type of writing that you do? Any particular books about marketing writing, mass communications, or publicity writing, or travel writing?
There's not any particular book resource that I've been really looking into, but I would say and highly recommend to the group any opportunity that there is to be part of a social media group that offers some of these sorts of maybe response to queries or maybe best practices. I would really recommend. I personally belong to the publishers author group, Reedy Press, and it's really great to see how people are, they'll share information or you can ask a question, especially since once you have the book published, the marketing piece of it is a whole different scenario. I felt like the writing was easy, but then after that, trying to figure out markets, I had never done markets or pop-up events, any type of signing, of course, whatsoever. This is my very first book. So, honestly, finding authors that really know what they're doing and more than happy to share that information. And then, hopefully, with the information that I've got, that I'm happy to share it as well. Like, oh, I want to get a banner. Where should I get a banner? And someone had shared just how important a banner was to them because they had gotten a photo on the cover of their local newspaper, and the banner was very large, clear, easy to recognize what that person was doing and where they were. And that sold it for me. I said, gosh, I need to order a banner. And people in the comments said, where should I get one? What should I do? I need a template. Somebody help. So Vistaprint was seemed to be the common answer, and within a couple of days, bada bing, bada boom, I had myself a banner, and now I take it with me everywhere. So it's one of those things that maybe I didn't really think about having that, but I'm really glad that someone posted about it because that was very helpful to me.
So this brings home another important point that a lot of people listening to us are independently published, and they're responsible for a lot of their own, for all of their marketing and publicity. But even you with a publisher still are responsible for a lot of your marketing.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things, like it's really up to you in terms of the marketing, in terms of the sales. There is some press assistance, there is some marketing assistance, but a lot of it does fall to the individual author. So it's really about the connections that you have in the market and the ones that you are going to go out and make for yourself, and just kind of offering, being viewed as something that a local business would be willing to maybe host you for a pop-up, or finding different markets and festivals and events that you can go to. And it's interesting. I've been doing this for literally just about a year now. I'm pretty much at my year anniversary, and it's been very interesting to see what has been successful, what really hasn't been, and some of the things I'm kind of surprised by it. There have been some booths that were really quite pricey and it wasn't worth it. And then there have been things where I'm like, oh, this is kind of small, but it ended up being very niche and it really worked in my favor. So it's kind of hard to guess what might work for you and your particular work. You just kind of have to be willing to try. And a lot of it is scary because you're like, well, I don't have a huge budget to do this and I don't have a ton of time, but you just kind of make it work. And you think, okay, well, if that event comes around next year, or if there's another one in a different time of year, I'm going to give it a go. Or I don't know, I might pass on that opportunity next time and find something different. And then also, speaking engagements. That's another thing I'm personally working harder to do. I'm kind of used to being a little bit more behind the scenes, and I think putting myself out there more and doing events, say at the local library, or enjoying this time with you fine folks, that's something that I'm really trying to work on, to talk about my book in a different capacity versus singularly doing markets and events.
I was very surprised to find that I went to a holiday market expecting it to be arts and crafts, and I found at least three authors there.
I had been an author, the only author at a lot of these events, and sometimes it worked in my favor and sometimes it hasn't. But this particular event, there seemed to be several. I was surprised.
Yeah. So just telling that to the group that Kristen went to a arts, basically an arts and crafts event, and set up a booth. And two other authors at least decided to do the same thing. Do we have any other hands there, Chanel?
We do. We have
Okay.
Lisa.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, loving this interview. Thank you so much. Great information. I have a question. What would you recommend if somebody was interested in doing a tour book, a broad spectrum one rather than a specific one to a town? Do you have any advice? And thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I appreciate that. My experience is limited to this particular work here, but I would think that connecting with publishers that do what you're looking for would be a good route to go. Also, if there are publishers that do something maybe similar, not quite exactly what you've got in mind, I don't think it hurts to ask. I guess my motto is the worst anyone can say is no, and then you're able to move on and try something or someone else. But be finding a publisher that you think might be open to the idea and see pitch it and see what they think.
I've noticed a number of places I've seen your book on display. How have you gotten your book into different places?
That has been kind of a multi-pronged approach, I feel like. Some places have done kind of a consignment type of scenario, which can be a little bit more difficult to track. And then some places have ordered from the publisher. If they order, I want to say if they order 15, they'll get a complimentary like box that has like a display that says, especially if they happen to be one of the things in the book, oh, we're number 57 or something along those lines. So some have done it that way as well. Could be somewhere where something where I've reached out to them and said, hey, I would love, if you're interested in carrying this, I can connect you with the publisher. The publisher does have a sales team, but I think a lot of it is my own pounding the pavement and saying, hey, would you be interested in carrying this, or that kind of a thing, especially if they're in the book. There are can think of at least two places that aren't in the book, but they Knoxville is a very supporting place of artists and makers, and I kind of view myself in that category. Like I made this book in a way, and a lot of people are really supportive of that, and they said, oh, well, we'd like a couple of copies. Maybe to sell along with maybe some local jewelry or other, some pottery or those kinds of things.
Very good. I think that's encouraging to a lot of people that are on the call and that will be listening to this interview.
Yeah, and it's always I try to think when I'm in a conversation with people to mention it in some way, especially if I'm thinking this a place might like to have me as a pop-up or something like that. Or there's a coffee shop here that has done a couple of different markets, and so that's always great to connect with them. I also try to pay attention on if you have a local Facebook information type swapping group that says, oh, hey, I'm looking for a place that does this, or I'm looking for X, Y, and Z, I try to pay attention to that group because here's a very recent example, an upcoming example, actually, where someone had said, I'm an activities coordinator at a local assisted living facility, and I would like to have a couple of booths in our activity and dining room. And if there's any interest, I would love to have some people at these booths. And I, just send me a message. So I sent this person a message and said, hey, I'd love a booth. And they're not even charging a booth space for it. It's just a couple of hours this Sunday. And I always figure, well, what do I have to lose? A couple of hours, and who knows what will happen, and who knows what interesting people I might meet. And hopefully someone will take home a signed book in the process. So that's the kind of thing. I just pay attention to the group and see if an opportunity comes up. Also, the events tab on Facebook. You can find a lot of interesting things on there that might be in your city or in your region that you'd be willing to travel to. Festival in Town X. Well, maybe they're looking for, they're looking for people to have a booth there, and there might be a fee, there might not, but you can always send the event host a message or try to find their website and introduce yourself and say, hey, I'm a writer of this book, and I would love to look into having a booth if you have opportunity.
Great suggestions. Can see how hard you're working at promoting the book and getting the buzz moving about it and letting people know about it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's definitely, I feel like the promotion of it afterwards is like its own job into itself. The writing part, I felt like that part came easy. The promotion of it, especially in a digital age, I think as someone might have mentioned, where people are looking for information that really a lot of it is free online somewhere. And I think for me, a couple of the selling points have been like, hey, you're supporting a local artist, a local maker, a local writer, however you want to view that. And I've compiled all of these things for you. It's all together in one convenient package. You're not going to have to, waste the time Googling. And this definitely seems to work for the couples that it walk by and they look frazzled, or they're just looking for something fun. And I'm like, you don't need to Google all this stuff. I've got a whole list of 100 things right here. You can open the book and here you go. Find something fun to do together. You've kind of made it easy for someone to just say, okay, let's flip it open. All right, we're going to go to the theater. We're going to find a date and we're going to go to a performance. Done.
I hear that you understand your audience. And you're creating a message that fits them.
I really try to. I try to kind of tailor my talking points to what it might be that they're interested in. If a family walks by, I say, oh, I've done a lot of these things with my daughter. I say, oh, she's born. And trust me, you can do this hike. This hike is easy. I've gone to this particular show, or this organization has specific events for kids. Like maybe the symphony, maybe they think, oh, I can't take my kids to the symphony. They'll never be able to sit through a performance. I say, well, you could go to this particular event that the symphony does that's geared towards kids, and they might not know about it. So same thing with the couples, or in the case of the market that I was at, where I had the pleasure of meeting Kathy, people that walk up on mountain bikes, and I get talking with them about their favorite trails. And then what do they like to do when they get off the trails? Where do they like to eat? Do they need suggestions? So yeah, I really do. I try to tailor it to different people, or people that are new to Knoxville. I say, oh, well, you've got to have this. It's a no-brainer. This is your complete guide to everything Knoxville. This book was written just for you. And I think that usually gets a smile out of people, and a couple will look at each other and say, Yeah, we do need this. Can you sign it for us? And I said, I would love to. Welcome to Knoxville.
Cheryl, I can hear you giggling.
Of course, my brain's going.
Yep.
Even though people take digital photos all the time, whether it's in your book, and they might, because they're going to be seeing specific things, they could put the photos right, tape them in your book, or create a 20, maybe 10, 15 page, 20 page little journal to go along with it.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They're very easy to make and it wouldn't cost much of the little thing.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great idea.
People love that stuff.
That's a great idea. And I do actually have book little bookmarks that I made on Vista.
Yes, she does. Yeah.
And the cost for me, I feel like, is really great. And not everyone buys one, but I tell people it's a $2 add-on to the book. I feel like maybe it helps cover some of my card transaction costs.
Mm-hmm.
With the cost of the bookmark. So that is kind of nice because almost every purchase is digital. I do get cash on occasion, mm-hmm. but definitely cards are, you absolutely need a Square Reader or some other card service 100% mm-hmm. or you will miss out on a lot of sales. There's only a couple of negatives to it. I have found that the font is very, very small. So I can't lie. It is a little bit difficult legibly. And so the next time I do a reprinting, I would like to figure out how to do that because I've basically mashed 100 things onto this small bookmark. So it's like, well, get out the magnifying glass and, it's very small. So I do feel bad for that. And then also on occasion, I do find people that want the bookmark just by itself. And that kind of defeats the purpose. Like, I'm wanting you to purchase the book, you know, where all the hard work was. The bookmark is just the add-on. I've only had maybe one or two people that have been a little bit, mildly upset about it, but, you know, they wanted all of the things without buying the book. So, but that's only happened a time or two. And also, once I find some free time, which certainly seems to be in short supply for us all, I would like to maybe do some, maybe small illustrations or, I don't know, mm-hmm. something that could, along your idea, Cheryl, of you know, a little journaling piece and maybe a coloring book
kind of book.
For kids. Mm-hmm. I feel like that could be kind of fun. And I've seen some things out there. And
there's some apps, Kristen, that you could take your photos and put them into an app. And
it'll
make
idea.
It into a coloring page.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
There you go.
There we go. So when I find that free time, I will be doing that.
So Kristen, how do people find your book and how do they contact you?
Absolutely. So you can find my book in a lot of places. You can find it at my website, sawthisdidthat.com. Sawthisdidthat.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at 100 Things Knoxville. And I post pretty regularly on those platforms. Facebook in particular is where I put my events. If anyone happens to be in the Knoxville area, or if I do any pop-ups, festivals, that kind of a thing. Facebook, Instagram, I also put a lot of stories and fun things up there. Just kind of my, what am I getting into? And hey, you should check this place out. Along with maybe some things that aren't in the book that maybe I couldn't fit into the book for some reason, or they opened since the book was published. And I'm just like, oh, here's a cool place. Go check this out. So sawthisdidthat.com, or my book is also available on and 100 Things Knoxville on Facebook and Instagram.
This week's prompt is going to be travel. Event enthusiastic. In 100 words or less, genre of your choice, have a blast. Thanks. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Kathy. Thank you so much, Kristen, for being with us. And thank you, everybody.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What a terrific episode. Thank you, everyone, for being with us for another exciting and informative episode today. And a big, big thank you to Kristen Combs and to everybody that provided such great questions. Be sure to visit writingworkswonders.com for these show notes, other resources, bonus content, and plenty of prior episodes for you to be able to listen to, enjoy, and share with your friends. You can contact us through the Contact Us button there at the website or email us at info@writingworkswonders.com. Above all else, we want you to be encouraged and inspired and enjoy the wonders of writing. We will look forward to being with you next time.
Thank you for joining us today on Writing Works Wonders. Kathy and I are thrilled to spend time with you.
A tap on that button that says subscribe so you will not miss our show. You can also tap on the link for writingworkswonders.com. It'll take you directly to all the show notes and information that we shared today. Then you can sign up to receive the Zoom link so that you can be live with us when we are recording. You can also contact us at info@writingworkswonders.com. Our phone number is 347-467-0221. We also have a donate button. All donations go to technical expenses that Kathy and I incur in order to keep this podcast going. Kathy and I want you to feel encouraged and inspired and know the wonder in writing. And until next time, our friends, keep on writing.
Opinions expressed on ACB Media are those of the respective program contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views held by the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.